Welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, a weekly news digest covering events in Israel. It's relevant and accurate information you need to know, direct from the Holy Land. You're listening to Front Page Jerusalem.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, the voice of Israel to the world, brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel in the city of the great king, Jerusalem. I'm Earl Cox.
I'm Ben Kinchlow.
And I'm Kevin Howard in Jerusalem.
To democratic societies, the topic of security and safety on the Temple Mount seems to be a straightforward matter. However, to the Islamic Middle Eastern mindset, it's less about security and more of a matter of control and not changing a sliver of how things are, were, or will be, making any discussion regarding the Temple Mount a hazardous tightrope of perceptions and contrasting mindsets.
When two parties try to speak, it does no good if one is defining terms different from the other, even when they are speaking the same first, second, or even third language. The challenges in Jerusalem with the Temple Mount consist of understanding the mindset of all of the parties. Unfortunately, for those in Western society, the cultural differences may not always seem important enough to learn and address, even after a conflict begins to escalate.
That's true enough, Ben. And when two parties have opposite and mutually exclusive definitions of even simple terms, it makes finding a solution that much harder. Recently, Doron Kidar, an Israeli security professional with a front seat view and understanding of the security challenges of the Temple Mount, talked with Kevin Howard about those issues. We'll bring you that in-depth interview in just a moment. But first, let's hear from the CFI Jerusalem News Desk, where David Milburn has the recent headlines from Israel. David?
Thanks, Earl. The European Union's High Representative for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy announced on Wednesday that the body will scrutinize the new Palestinian textbooks for context that incites hate and violence, out of concern that EU aid funds are being used to promote hatred. The announcement follows an investigation and campaign by Impact. They found that the new Palestinian textbook releases in September 2018 are even more radical than previous editions, with hundreds of examples of extremism, encouraging jihad, violence, demonization, and incitement against Israel and Jews. The European Union is the largest financial donor to the Palestinian Ministry of Education, but European taxpayers' money and goodwill have been abused for years, with generations of young Palestinians systematically undergoing radicalization, said Marcus Scheff, CEO of the Institute. There is no excuse and no justification. The PA takes hundreds of millions of euros and in return educates millions of children to violence, hatred and jihad. We hope that the EU's in-depth examination of this issue will help put an end to this abuse of children and will finally enable young Palestinians to receive a meaningful education for peace and tolerance. Now, before we return to Earl, here's today's This Page in History.
On Friday afternoon, May 14, 1948, David Ben-Gurion declared Israel's independence. He opened the ceremony by banging his gavel on the table, prompting a spontaneous rendition of Hatikvah, soon to be Israel's national anthem, from the 250 guests gathered. On the wall behind the podium hung a picture of Theodor Herzl, the founder of modern Zionism, and two flags, later to become the official flag of Israel. The entire declaration ceremony was recorded and broadcast on Voice of Israel radio station. The United States, under President Truman's direction and against State Department opposition, would go on to become the first country to recognize the new and already besieged state, and over the next few days, the armies of Egypt, Transjordan, Iraq, and Syria attacked the fledgling state, starting the Israeli War of Independence, which would go on for another 9 months. Today, the declaration is celebrated annually in Israel with a national holiday, where families, regardless of religious observance or affiliation, celebrate with picnics and barbecues, whilst balconies and cars are decorated with Israeli flags.
Welcome back, everybody. For most of the world, security is a simple and straightforward measure, no matter where that security must be placed. Today, many are used to security nearly everywhere. So why, when it's a question of Israeli security, does the matter end up being a source of conflict? Kevin Howard recently spoke with Doron Kidar to find out more.
Thanks, Earl. I am indeed speaking with Doron Kidar here in our Jerusalem studios. Doron, thank you for being our guest today.
It's great to be on the show. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Doran, when it comes to the Temple Mount, Israel has constantly reiterated that there has not been a change to the Temple Mount status quo. So why do you think the Palestinian Arabs believe there has been or will be a change?
If you see what's happened in the past year now, roughly, from Feast of Tabernacles a year ago, if anybody remembers the blood moons, now you're all thinking about the solar eclipse that happened, you know, so we forget the past, right? Now we're on a new thing, a new theme, I guess you could say. It's very typical in the Christian world to kind of get into one thing, you get excited about it, and then you forget about it and you move on to the next exciting thing. So to tie in what's been happening, I would say in the past few years, actually since 2014, the issue of the Temple Mount has escalated in public awareness, government awareness, and what do we do about it? And because of this, the Islamic world has pushed back. And like you said, they have this idea in the back of their minds that the Israeli government is actually going to change the status quo. And not change the status quo as we speak. See, we speak in Western terms. The government of Israel speaks in Western terms. In their mind, that's not what they think is a change in status. In their minds, we're going to destroy the Al-Aqsa. We are going to remove all the Islamic shrines and mosques up there, and we're going to prohibit or forbid Muslims going up there. It's in their minds, it's a takeover. It's not a sharing of the space. It's not allowing what is being forbidden right now is Jewish prayer on the Temple Mount. We're talking two different terms in a sense. You know, we're saying one thing, they're interpreting another. The reason for this is because the Arab world to a Westerner is primitive. Okay, they're primitive in their mindset and the way they behave and the way they perceive things. It's just a different mindset. It's a different way to view the world. Unfortunately, that leads to bloodshed. It leads to terrorist attacks. It leads to a lot of different things. And the Temple Mount is really that key issue that causes that trigger that any little, I mean, literally little changes that we would like to do and that are legal and right can turn out very catastrophic.
So in your view, how would the dynamics around the Western Wall change if the Temple Mount permitted prayer for all people of all faiths?
Here's the thing. On the Temple Mount, prayer is forbidden because our leaders are afraid. Ever since 1967, when literally God gave us a supernatural victory over the armies that tried to destroy us again, we were able to regain control over the Golan Heights, Judea, Samaria, which the world calls the West Bank, and, of course, the Temple Mount. Ever since then, there's been a policy of appeasement, a policy of appeasing the Islamic world because of the fear of what could happen if we were to do otherwise. So, yes, we regained control over the Temple Mount. Yes, you have the famous recording of Motagul declaring, Harabait Be'adenu, the Temple Mount is in our hands, which is a very emotional, powerful quote in the minds of Jews around the world as, wow, that was such an emotional day. But my question is, well, what did we get out of that? We got nothing. What we got is to have a Jewish rule in what is today called East Jerusalem, which actually turns out is also biblical Jerusalem. This is important to understand for the audience if they come from a Christian background. We're not talking about occupying, taking over Arab land. We're talking about biblical land, land that was allotted to the Jewish people. And if we don't put our stamp on these areas, if we don't say, look, this is where we need to declare sovereignty, and we keep allowing it to become this in-the-air situation where it's predominantly Arabs that live in these areas, the police are basically terrified to go in there and to enforce the law, which, with all due respect, I don't see any difference between enforcing the law in an Arab neighborhood or in a non-Arab neighborhood or in a Christian neighborhood. It doesn't matter. The law is the law. And what happens is, like with the Bedouins in the south, you know, is another example of that. When we allow this lawlessness, then you end up with a situation where the government feels that if we can't exercise sovereignty, or if we exercise sovereignty, because Israel is sovereign on the Temple Mount, and allow Jews and others to come, like at the Western Wall, and pray, this will create an uproar. It's the other way around. If we start to put in the minds of the Arab world, especially the ones living here, and especially the Muslim Arabs, that this is an area where we're sovereign like we are everywhere else, and this is an area, according to the peace treaty that we have with Jordan in 1994, where we're going to exercise freedom of worship and religion for the three monotheistic religions. That's in Article 9, 1, 2, and 3. People don't mention it, the government doesn't mention it, and what we just did recently is we threw ourselves under the bus with this issue of the metal detectors. And again, it's because of fear, and it leads to a very big problem.
Why did Israel feel the need to pull back concerning the recent security measures it took after two Druze officers were killed on the Temple Mount?
The reason why it's such an issue is, like I said, how do the Arabs interpret this, right? Again, you have to understand their mindset. That's the biggest problem, is our government, unfortunately, is very ignorant to the Arab mindset. They don't even make an effort to learn. They don't make an effort to study the Arab mindset. And I've learned this through working in politics and doing security for the government for many years. And asking myself this question, how is it that you guys keep talking Chinese to these folks, so to speak, right? Why are you talking a foreign language? Talk their language. Act the way they would expect you to act in the Middle East. We don't live in Europe. We don't live in the United States. Unfortunately, this is causing our security professionals and those who are on the security panels and so on to make very foolish mistakes. One of them being the issue of the metal detectors that were put up in response to the murder, the cold-blooded murder, which, if this is such a holy site to Islam, with all due respect, how is it that you would go and murder the people who are enforcing the law? Not just enforcing the law against you, the very opposite, enforcing the law in your favor by preventing Jews and others from praying on the Temple Mount and allowing only Muslims. It sounds insane. But again, any small changes to the Temple Mount is a message to the Arab world that Israel, because what happens is they're fed propaganda. And they're not primitive, they're just taught in a very simple way. You know, they're taught propaganda since they're children. They're taught to think a certain way. And the minute something like this happens, then the propaganda overrules the reality. Because the reality is, any normal person would say, what's the big deal with having a metal detector? And I know, like, the Westerners make fun and say, well, it's because, you know, they're the ones who are the perpetrators, so of course they're going to protest the metal detectors, and that's not the issue. The main reason is you've changed a hair of a difference up on the Temple Mount. This is a declaration of the occupation and what we've been told since we're little kids, that the Jews are trying to take over the Temple Mount. So that's really the issue. The government of Israel needs to keep in the vein of enforcing sovereignty, enforcing the law on the Temple Mount like anywhere else in the country of Israel. That's my advice.
Praying for understanding of the mindset of all participants in the issues surrounding the Temple Mount is an extremely important part of praying for the peace of Jerusalem. But right now, we need to take a short break so that you can hear about a special outreach project of Christian Friends of Israel that's making a tremendous difference in the lives of some very special people in Israel today.
You stand on duty, with the wind biting through your uniform. The day is overcast, and winter's chill bites deeper as the day progresses on into evening. You hear rumors of what some in the nations say about you as an IDF soldier. You wonder if anyone outside of Israel ever really cares. The next morning, you hear that you are going to have visitors. A small group of civilians is arriving, bringing fleece jackets, hats, smiles, and support from the nations. As you interact, you cannot help but feel the genuine care and love expressed by these new friends from something called Project David's Shield. With a warm jacket and very cool hat, you sit to listen as these new friends explain the care and concern that so many in the nations have for the tiny nation you protect. You learn that they consider you the modern-day warriors of David's army, defending the people of the land. Your heart is warmed by more than the jacket they provide. It is also warmed by the knowledge that you are not alone. There are many who really care.
Christian Friends of Israel's project, David's Shield. Just one more way we're making a difference in Israel, one life at a time. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to our continuing discussion between Front Page Jerusalem's Kevin Howard and Doron Kedar as they focus on Israel's security perspectives and mindsets. concerning the Temple Mount.
Doran, how does the Temple Mount issue relate to a unified Jerusalem, especially in light of the recent UNESCO decisions over the last year, trying to separate the Jewish historical facts from the city?
Well, here's the thing. Jerusalem's not united without Mount Zion. Zionism is dead without Zion. That's my opinion. What is Zionism? Zionism is a movement towards a return to Zion. On the rivers of Babylon, we were like dreamers and so on and so forth. Why? Because of our hope to return to Zion, not to return to Tel Aviv, not to return to the Negev, not to return to the north. It was to Zion because this is the heart. This is the heart of Judaism. It's the heart of the rule of Israel, starting with King David, and so on. So if we allow the Temple Mount to remain in the situation it is right now, then what we're doing is we're declaring to Islam, we're declaring to the world via UNESCO, that it's not that important to us. So you can decide on our behalf. And that's what they've done. They've filled the vacuum. UNESCO has filled the vacuum of our incompetence, really, and said, fine, this is Islamic. This is where al-Bulak, the winged animal that took Muhammad to the sky, was tied to the Western Wall. So thus the Western Wall is now Islamic, right? This is the farthest mosque that Muhammad journeyed to. So thus the Al-Aqsa is Islamic. It's important to Islam. Forget the fact that we have history that dates back to 4,000 years of Jewish presence in this area, right? Not to mention the baptismal pools all around the Temple Mount, which is for the ritual purity leading up to the service at the temple before Islam was even of existence. So the same goes to the Tomb of the Patriarchs. The Tomb of the Patriarchs is another place that was beautified by Herod, just like the Temple Mount was. So you have the same Jewish history having a facelift to this very Jewish site. What happens is Islam puts its mark, and what happens? UNESCO fills in that gap again and says, okay, so we're going to declare this also Islamic. So it's a downward spiral. You know, again, it all goes back to Israel not enforcing the law. If you don't enforce the law and you don't declare sovereignty in these areas, we haven't done this. Just recently, Hebron has been declared a Jewish settlement. Just recently, after 39 years. That's the issue. It's really in our hands. We have to start taking these issues into our hands and quit letting others decide for us.
So what other areas of challenge do you see in the land of Israel that are impacted by this issue?
Well, what it would do is it would solve the issue of the settlements. Right now, when you talk about peace in the Middle East between the Jewish people and the Palestinians, the main stumbling block, according to the experts, is the settlements, Jewish settlements in Judea, Samaria, or what they call the West Bank, slash, or what they call the occupied territories, in a negative tense. Because, yes, it is. There is Jewish occupants there. There's also Muslim occupants there. So what? But when they make these into these political spins in terms that are negative, they're the ones who are actually causing the problem. They're inflaming the issue. They're giving the Palestinians more material, more propaganda to carry out terrorist attacks, not have peace, and to keep fighting Israel. So in essence, if we were to solve the issue of the Temple Mount by exercising Jewish sovereignty on the Temple Mount, and that doesn't mean excluding the world from having access to the Temple Mount. That's the kind of the misconception there. When I say Jewish sovereignty, it doesn't mean Jewish exclusivity. We have a peace treaty with Jordan that was written in 1994. We, both Israel and Jordan, are breaking that agreement. So if we were to solve this issue, in my opinion, to show that, yes, we are sovereign and so on, then what's going to happen is that the issue of the settlements are going to become a less of an issue. But in my opinion, once they see the new reality on the ground and they see that there's a different response from Israel, not a coward response, but an aggressive response, and basically declaring that we are sovereign here, not you. And there is a law in this land. And if you break that law, you throw rocks, Molotov cocktails, and what have you, you're going to prison. Or you're going to be shot as a terrorist if we need to. You know, in the worst case scenario, right? In other words, crime is not going to pay. Terrorism is not going to pay. And so the more we enforce this law and the more we show the world that, yes, we do care about the Temple Mount, it will only also reflect in Judea and Samaria and the so-called occupied territories. And then that's not going to be an argument anymore that because Israel has settlements, then this is why there isn't peace. The reason why we don't have peace is because we're not exercising the law, is actually the reality. And I think people, wherever they're coming from in the world, anywhere where you see the law is not exercised, that's where you have the most crime, because the police are afraid to go in there, right? We're all human beings. We're all capable to do what's right and what's wrong.
Doran, why is the Temple Mount access relevant to our listeners and their faith?
As a Christian, you come to the land of Israel. You visit Galilee, and you know, you go to Akko or Yafo, and you're like, wow, you know, this is where the Bible came alive. And you have a great experience, right? Then you go up to Jerusalem to, I mean, now this is like the highlight, you know. You go to Jerusalem, and everything's nice, everything's pleasant. And you go visit the Western Wall, and you have a wonderful time. Think about that. What if you were able to access the Temple Mount on the same level? To me, that's what you get out of that. That's the reality, is that you have an access to a holy site where you're not hackled. For example, with the groups that I bring up there, Christian groups, I tell them ahead of time how to dress and everything. And they'll do their best, but no matter what and how hard they try, the Islamic Waqf will hackle them and give them a hard time. They always draw someone aside and, you know, you this and you that. And it's such a, it's not a pleasant feeling. It's not a pleasant experience. So that's the reality. That's what would change up on the Temple Mount.
So what do you feel that our listeners could do in a practical way concerning this issue?
I think the best thing that your listeners can do is prayer. Prayer is the most powerful tool we have. The beautiful thing is nobody has the power to prevent me from praying where I'm at. Okay, so I can't pray up on the Temple Mount right now as things are, but I can pray right where I'm at. I can pray at the Western Wall. If you have access to the Western Wall, it's the closest you can get to where Solomon dedicated this place. The way I see it is a good practice, find out where Jerusalem is, where you're from. If you're in the eastern part of the world or the western part of the world or the south of Israel, locate the direction of the temple. This is what Jews do, or three times a day, is we pray towards Jerusalem. And that's how our synagogues are facing and that kind of thing. So as a practice, and you can learn this from Daniel. Daniel did this three times a day. He opened his windows towards Jerusalem and he prayed. And so there's a power in understanding and in connecting to the place that God promised through Solomon, that even if a foreigner from a faraway place prays to this place, that God, you would answer his prayer, that he may know that you are God. And so that's a promise we have in Scripture. You can read it in the dedication of the temple that Solomon built. It's a beautiful passage of Scripture, and I think it's very inspiring. And of course, also the inspiration that we have from Daniel when he was in the exile. So pray towards this place. Pray pinpointed prayers, specific prayers, national. The Jewish people have a nationalistic idea. If you look at our prayers, they're national, they're kingdom focused. It's more focused, basically, right?
Doran Kedar, Executive Director of Cry for Zion, thank you for being our guest today on Front Page Jerusalem.
Thank you, sir.
Ben, back to you.
Well, thanks, Kevin, for that very interesting and up-close discussion concerning security issues at the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. Well, our time is almost up for this week, and coming up, we'll hear from David Nekrutman, the Executive Director of CJCUC, with this week's Bible on the Go. But first, another visit to the CFIJ News Desk and David Milburn.
Thanks, Ben. As potential coalition partners continue to dig in their heels, preventing any significant progress in talks to form a new government, and with time running out for him to finalize a deal, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu reported to be looking at forming a government of just 60 lawmakers, which is half of the Knesset total. The non-majority government would be formed without the Israel Beiteinu party led by Avigdor Lieberman. Just under 2 weeks before the final deadline for Netanyahu to submit a coalition to the Knesset, talks appear to have stalled and no agreement has been signed with any party. Without reconciling the conflicting demands, of Israel Beiteinu and the ultra-Orthodox parties, as well as the other factions likely to join, Netanyahu will be unable to achieve a coalition of at least 61 seats in the 120-member Knesset. While the established establishment of a minority or non-majority government right after parliamentary elections would be unprecedented in Israel, it is theoretically possible. The new government must receive majority support in the Knesset, but need not obtain the approval of a supermajority of 61 or more. Netanyahu complained that the task of forming a coalition seemed absurd, accusing potential coalition partners of making excessive and conflicting demands during negotiations. Now, before we return to Earl and Ben, here's David Nekrutman with this week's Bible on the Go.
There are people in my life that have impacted me who are still living, and the sages of the past. Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel is one of those people who I've never met personally, but his words continue to inspire me even to today. He is famous for walking with Dr. Martin Luther King from Selma to Montgomery during the height of the civil rights movement. And while he was walking, he comments that his legs were praying. How can walking be prayer? It struck me. It was something that was like a wow moment, because I always thought of prayer as a list of requests I need to approach God about. And hey, this is what I need in my life, a nice car, house, health. But Rabbi Heschel taught me something very profound, that prayer is nothing about you. It's everything about God. But in order for that to really happen, you have to contract your ego and allow God to come in. This actually was very profound for me when I rediscovered Psalm 69:13. But I pray to you, Lord, in the time of your favor, in your great love, O God, answer me with your sure salvation. The beginning words, but I pray to you, in Hebrew is va'ani tefilati, literally translated, I am prayer. What does that mean, I am prayer? How do you become prayer? That has to happen at the moment where your ego, self-centeredness, is totally out of the picture and you're in the state of God. This is David Nekrutman with Bible on the Go.
Thanks, David. Well, that's our show for today. We hope that you've enjoyed the program, everybody, and thanks for joining us. And please don't forget to support this station, because this station supports Israel.
And before we go, we want to remind you to please pray for the peace of Jerusalem. And let me invite you to join us on this station right here next week as we bring you all the latest from Israel and the Middle East.
So for now, on behalf of the entire staff of Front Page Jerusalem, I'm Earl Cox, reminding you that because God loves Israel, I do too.
You've been listening to Front Page Jerusalem. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com. Front Page Jerusalem is brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel Jerusalem, making a difference in Israel one life at a time. Front Page Jerusalem is a production of Level E Media Incorporated.